Mr. Cheeseman, Reel 40. We were talking about the approach to Salerno.
Yes, and anyway, I said, the CCSs were right on the horizon, and in front of them would, of course, the Desert B echelon, where all the heavy equipment that we didn't need in battle was. Only, of course, there were merchantmen ships swinging at anchor. And then in front of them was the heavy long-range artillery. Two capital ships with their 15-inch guns, and when they went off, and they did go off while we were there, bursting every unprotected eardrum within miles. Then in front of them came the ubiquitous 25-pounders that we saw in the desert, you know, going on. Only, of course, there were destroyers and rocket barges. Whilst the only people with terra firma under their feet were the lads on the beach. Now, we were told that Jerry was away from the beach, and I think, in hindsight, I do believe that the beachhead had been, was well and truly established, and what I had experienced was sporadic fire from odd pockets somewhere. It didn't seem so at the time. We thought, oh, the whole British German army is welcoming us here, but that's my impression. And now, finishing off this impression of battle elements in the water, except the desert, of course, everything was being brought together in an integral role by communications, winking all the slumps, because there was wireless silently. And of course, the staff cars and what have you, and of course, they were all books and that sort of thing. It's a scene that sticks right in your mind altogether. Well, now, coming back to on board my ship, our ship, we had four Bofa guns on the top deck with us. And it was these lads, limbering up and getting everything ready, that told us how when they were going to run in. Now, they weren't getting ready for aircraft, anti-aircraft, but they were getting ready for shore-based targets when they came to range there. Because the Navy lads were taking care of, I think there was about two aircraft came all the way, but they were very little aerial activity. And it was awesome to see the bursts, puffs of black smoke in the air, you know, around the planes. It charmed lives, the whole thing. Anyway, in we started going. Now, my feelings. Would you believe it that welling up over the top of the medieval basic instinct of self-preservation and that sort of fight and a feeling, welling up above that was a sort of culmination of purpose. This was the moment that we'd been preparing for the past number of weeks, you know, training and retraining and retraining. And sure enough, when we hit terra firma, without orders, without thinking, we automatically went into our off-practiced routine of unshackling all our vehicles, starting up and testing the engine to see everything was all right, and putting one up the spout of our revolvers and incinerator one, and that's it. But you see, we bellied on an underwater obstruction, I would say, at least 300 yards away from the water's edge. Now, afterwards was told that the likelihood that Jerry, that there was a good beach to land on, and Jerry must have dredged a trench, a subterranean trench there, and all the spoil from just put at seaward, because the Mediterranean one has got 9-inch tide, so one position is okay. And what had happened is that we hit the spoil heap, stopped, because when the landing platform and with the old depth gauge, there's 15 feet of water. Well, there was only 6 foot at the time. In other words, we were prisoners on a whacking great target, which the odd gun that was the jelly was fighting at us took great advantage of. He never hit us. But my goodness, can you imagine? We didn't know it was just the odd one. It was a full army there that was throwing stuff at us. So imagine that culmination of purpose. It was, oh my God, Well, with the landing ship, when they go in, they drop a stern anchor so they can pull themselves off. Well, that's Germany's bit here, and of course, with a boom, 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 the propeller hitting the water full steam of stern, and we slowly came back off, I'm not kidding you, if it came off at a 1,000 miles a second, it was still very slowly coming back into deep water and away out of range of what most of what he was throwing at us. Now, this had never happened in our training, and so we didn't have any automatic, and because our minds were so, oh God, we never thought about re-subtracting the old vehicles again. So that in our second run, in this time even faster, when he hit that obstruction again, all the unshackled vehicles ran forward. And we had a number of broken legs and arms where lads, going in and let's get under our vehicles to get out of the way. And there's no doubt that one or more of my lads would have had a being injured, but I was thinking as clearly as I could, and I thought, blind panic. The best thing to do with blind panic is give the mind something to do. And so I'd ordered them to put up, get the grounding out. That was against orders, by the way. We weren't supposed to get grounding, get it mounted onto the gun rail that runs around the top of the truck, ready. And, my goodness. That worked too well, that therapy, because he cut the gun up and they got half of blinking out, got the ammo off before him. I said, stop firing, you stupid bastards, there's our chaps out there, and well, the jelly got, anyway, that's it. And we were still stuck. But as oh, by the way, the Volker guns, now, the whizzing past our ears almost, they were moving like hell. And, as bad as things were on the top deck, imagine them down on the tank deck. They were in an enclosed space with the bow doors were open, of course, in there. And, of course, they had unshackled and they had started their engines up. They didn't have any air or wind to blow that away. They were nearly suffocated down there in the fumes all that time. And we still couldn't get out. It was the third time. Now, I said that we landed there about late afternoon. It was gone 12 o'clock at night when we got off that boat. And by the way, I think it must still be there. Because when he comes this next time, he just put it. And I think the water's edge came up about a third away from the stern. The rest was on dry. We never even touched the water at all.
The dry landing.
Yes, absolute dry landing. And of course, the first thing we had to do then is to take all this stuff that we put on because, it could slow an engine, stop an engine, what have you. So we had to haul all this lot off all our vehicles, so we were pretty busy. And by the way, the three lads, they proved they were worth all right. They were good lads, they were. And it was first time in action, it was the first time of my landing as well. But nevertheless, they were great. But I must tell you what, I didn't lose my temper, I got het up a little bit. They were out doing the various vehicles and like that. And is it Jim? Fred? Anyway, one of them came back. little dog in his arms.
Little
dog in his arms. And he said, you know, as you stupid bucket of it, put a bullet through its head, poor animal, put it out of its misery. He said, I can't do it, Sarge. Maybe you can do it for me. I couldn't do it.
Or was it injured, the dog?
Oh my goodness. It had a whacking great gaping wound in its left shoulder. It had the best part of its left ear blown off. And, you know, I think it was
in a bad way. What happened then?
In a quiet moment that we took it along to them all. And he stitched up its wound and put a field dressing over its ear and a doggy-sized injection of a penicillin and what have you. And we nursed that dog back to full health. And we called it Recky. Recky too, of course. And Recky became a very, very wise dog, I can tell you.
Were there signs of dead and that on the beaches?
No, there wasn't. I never saw it because, of course, it's dark, understand. We were busy all the time. Plus the fact we were aware that the silhouette of a person in front of you wasn't necessarily ours. It could be someone, you know. Self-preservation was there all the time, didn't I? But we still had a job to do. And those two things, almost, never mind what was, I still have a horror for dead bodies. I couldn't have cared less during that time. And of course, I'm going back in. But anyway.
So when you landed, you saw to your vehicle so you could get the anti-sea, the protection against the sea off. What happened to you then?
Well, as I say, we were gradually formed up. We got there's an awful lot of banging, you know, there was quite a bit of action going on. And also rumours coming back that we were attached to the 5th American Army. A lot of rumours came back that the Yanks were running around grumbling because they hadn't had this week's ration of cooking, chocolate or whatever, you know. And I've already said that I tried as I might, I can't get a pleasant, a good impression of the nature of Yankees. There's some gentlemen Yankees about, there's no argument about them, but the general, like we say, I'm trying to say, like, you know, they used to say that non-good Germans are dead ones. We're talking nationally rather than individually. And so that didn't sort of bring that up in my mind. Oh, we also told it now that I've been trying to think of what is the American equivalent to our SAS?
Rangers.
The Rangers were ahead of us, and they may, behind Jerry and all this sort of thing, and keep an eye out for them because we don't shoot our own men. Of course we don't. And I think it was about a fortnight afterwards when we were going to Naples or something like that. Our BS on that is behind suddenly the foundation Rangers coming out. But we got out of the beachhead. All this sort of death and this, oh, there was one point there as well. My troop leader put me in this courtyard, a big house with a courtyard and walled in courtyard. He said, I want you to stay, because you know, radio. He said, stay here and I'll be back for you, or what have you. And we were stopping there. This was the following day, and we were still on the beachhead. Then we were sort of looking around and what have you, and I looked at this hole in the ground, all ruffled diameter, and it was obviously clay ground because it was lovely, right away, and at an angle, right away down. How they landed on exploded shell. And, I never thought we'd have anything to make a a notice with. But I never thought at the time to put a notice up. You know, we stayed as near there, safe enough distance away, but we had to stay because that was a rendezvous for the leader.
As a recce unit, you'd be presumably ahead of your battalion, right? Or recce troop, I think you said it was.
Right.
How was it made up? What was it composed of?
Four Brendan characters. A captain in charge, and of course, I think Brendan carrier used to carry 6-7 fellows. We used to carry 3 only, as the driver, the gunner, and the carrier come on there. We had a reasonably easy war route after that, speaking like that. But as I say, the comparison that my impressions now is that with all dark as well as danger and what have you, nightmarish, and suddenly we were out in the sunshine with cultivated fields of groundnuts or tomatoes, vineyards and orange groves. What a hell of a difference. And by the way, that tobacco, fields of tobacco plant, I remember this is after we'd been in Italy for quite a while. It was short of a flag, you know, what told me. And I said, well, we are bloody stupid, aren't we? What do you mean? I said, we're short of a flag, you know, look where we're parked in the tobacco plant.
Do you recall any of the events, you know, that you remember going forward from the beachhead and advancing from there?
Not a great deal. There's only one, I think, two troops of one squadron of our battalion were involved in the taking of Naples. Now, as a ready troop, we scouted into the suburbs and back out, no problems at all. We began to learn, first of all, that if the natives were waving Union Jacks, everything was okay. But if they weren't waving Union Jacks, they could quite well be waving the swastika and watch out. In other words, Charlie hadn't gone. We got to know that if, you know, the attitudes are there. Now, there was also, of course, occasions where Jelly was forcing them. They'd got their father and mother at gunpoint and didn't waste them and said, no, you go out and think that, you know, otherwise we're going to get you. You get that sort of thing. And, of course, we quickly became wise to that. But there was one thing which I may have been wrong, but it served us certainly okay, and that is that you would never ever get them showing their children if Jerry was about. No way! And I can tell you a story about that, by the way, but the thing that sticks in my mind most was the Sparanese do. We wrecking in that, and we got locked in. And apart from the telling coming along and sorting Jerry out, we would have been taken prisoner. No argument about that. And it was an alarming effort. We got there just as it was getting dark. And I think we after the following afternoon before we got out, and we were really very, very, very frightened during that time.
Was this an ambush that you'd run into?
Yeah, it was so obvious. But it was stronger than we thought, you see, because we had our Browning on the truck, and of course the Brendan carriers, they had that. So we had good firepower, you know. Now, when I can't vouch for this, I didn't hear it, but never nevertheless, I think it's true, because it was all around the battalion later on, that it was on the BBC News that the American Fifth Army had, after heavy fighting and what have you, had won Sparanese. That's what sticks in my mind. The name was given. The American Fifth Army. Yes, it's true. But there wasn't a Fremen American within 20 miles of Fremen place. And in fact, I put it to you, I may be wrong, but I put it to you, I can only say what I have seen. The American Fifth Army had combatant troops of the 7th Armoured Division, the Highland Division, and I think 10T's Division.
First battalion, the Durhams, they had there.
Yes, well, that's probably.
But I think they were with an Indian division as well, that was and that side. But the
no,
point.
You've got all that. There was no. The only combatant American troops I saw were the long range gunners. And my goodness, hey, you heard the old the saying, haven't you? When Jerry opens up, we take cover. When we open up, Jerry takes cover. When the Yankee opens up, everybody takes cover. Yes, they were just bum, 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 and off. There was no, you know, I'm waiting and, as I say, I was prejudiced to start with, but I don't like the American army. They're not an army. Full stop. Let it go.
Did you get into, the Sparanese, I think you said, was that a town or a...
Yes, a
foothills,
yes.
So you were fighting through hills and
that's
mountainous
right.
Areas, were you, at this time? What are your memories of that?
Not too bad on occasions, but you see, we were confined to the roads. And of course, Jerry had all the crossroads and what have you. For the first time in my life, I was taught the hard way, and I learned that he's firing, boom, and it's around the road in there. He still said, hello, it's taken him 30 seconds between that and the other, and said, right, you are, one's got, now get through in that 30 seconds before the next one, that sort of thing, All the other incident as well, and this was a frightening occur, was one of our grand carriers had shed a track, and it was in an awkward position. And there were never workers, as we called them, they were all around in there. And I got up and said, there's never young something on the road. Yeah, there's never workers. So I parked my vehicle sufficiently far away where one never worker wouldn't disable both vehicles. But at the same time, armour plating, it'd cover us whilst we try and get the track on. Now I've got two fellas, so there's only, I thought, well, I can use the driver and my spare and myself. We can heave this, see what we can do if we are getting this track on. So I left two of my fellas, one in front with a gun, down on the ground in front of my four foot truck. The other one with the Bren gun, chap from the Bren, and the Browning on the back. The officer in charge of the Brendan carrier, he took charge. He became observer. I could hear him. I was too busy looking at him. You've got to grip the track and then re-thread it through. I said, we've got a half an hour job here, tomorrow. I said, we've got a half an hour job here, sir. All you have to ship, make sure they took it, and then they cut off their right, and he was ordering the guns. Anyway, not long after we started out over there, the first one, boom, he bracketed us. Well, anyway, they managed to get him, our lads. And that's fair enough.
Was this mortar shelling coming in?
Mm-hmm. That's fair enough. But the third one come, but it was from a different direction. But anyway, in the meantime, I thought, I can't have time, it's no use. I've got to try and heave it on with a crowbar. So the two of us were heaving away and heaving over, and suddenly it did clatter back into position. And I'm not kidding you, when that awe, a relief, you know, and off we went. So and that was my nearest remembered action when I came out of that way. Okay, there was another occasion later on, but I mentioned Spalanese. We were in the Capua, and also the river. The river rock terminal crossing. Now, I've got a photograph of that, and it was taken more or less through the windscreen of my armoured car, to, you know, as we were going across it. And the reason for that is, of course, there was Jerry Snipers all around. And I was told afterwards that that was the very first Bailey Bridge ever to be used in action in the war. Now, if I'd known that at the time, of course, I would have taken a better photograph when we came back a couple of weeks later when there was nothing there. But,
Had the division made the attack across the Volturne, or were they following infantry that had already gone over?
Oh, the infantry had gone across it, but, you know, there were it's just the sporadic firing. Oh, yes, we...
were the Germans booby-trapping the roads and so on?
Apparently so, but...
You didn't have any experience of it.
No, I knew that you just didn't jump in. But my reasoning was that if it looked as if the vehicle or what have you was there a long time, keep away from it as possible. If it seems as if it's just breaking down, you haven't got time to move the traffic, it would be all right. I know that doesn't always work, but. That's the premise that I should work on. Yes, I think I ought to tell you first of all that the rations that we got when we were in Italy were not like we had in the desert. They were compo rations. Now there's a lot of bad things being said about compo rations. All I can say is that the persons that say that never had Vietnam rations, because they were absolutely... They even had toilet paper in them, and that was a luxury, that indeed. But, you know, anyway, our compo rations, fighter formative, came in tins. And so we had, I've got the lads to fix up a sort of bracket to fit on the exhaust manifold, or the hot exhaust manifold of the truck, right? And so you put the tins on this thing there, and then as you go along, after about an hour's travelling or something, the heat's getting there, if lunchtime comes, then you've got a hot meal immediately, not mucking about with the petrol smoke.
What were you getting in the compo rations?
Well, for instance, we said, there you are, we have obviously meat, veg, potatoes, and pudding, rice pudding, or what have you, or sponge pudding. Beautiful stuff, really. Chocolate, you know, fruit gums and that. So, I tell you this because the next story I'll tell you, it involves this. Well, I've been called up to this clearing. It was a little bushland and things like that, and a rubble house there, something like that. The enemy troop leader, actually, he said, you know, he got a problem with his steering. And actually, what it was, when I found out, was that the steering mechanism is done by a cam plate under the engine. Now, the fulcrum of that cam plate was a ball bearing, and then it collapsed. And so, when I saw this, I said, I'm sorry, sir, but it's never made easier. I mean, the crane lift the engine. And so on. And I said, but I tell you what, if you, because he wasn't ready, I said, if you like, I'll try it. So I took all the adjustments right, made the tracks tight, almost tight, with no play in the track door, and took all the payout of the linkages and the other guy, and it gave him about 40% maneuverability, but it was still stiff. Anyway, it satisfied him. And he thought we'd gone his way, but he said, look, I'm returning here, Sergeant. Stop here, and I'll come back. Have a bit of lunch while I'm away.